had a hot dog lately? From cheap ones sold in vending carts to overpriced ones sold at sports events, and even high-end versions sold in gourmet restaurants, there's no getting away from this American food staple. Whether you love them or hate them, you'll want to hear these five key insights from the highly entertaining New York Times bestseller, Raw Dog, The Naked Truth About Hot Dogs by Jamie Loftus. Jamie is a comedian, Emmy-nominated TV writer and podcaster, and she joins us now to share five tasty big ideas.
Hey, my name is Jamie Loftus. I am an Emmy-nominated comedian and writer. In the past, I have worked as a TV writer for shows like Robot Chicken, Teenage Euthanasia, and Star Trek Lower Decks. And I'm also an award-winning podcast host and producer of shows like The Bechdel Cast, My Year in Mensa, Lolita Podcast, ActCast, and Ghost Church. So today, I'm going to tell you about five of the main things I learned on my thrilling manic adventure into hot dog world when I was researching and writing Raw Dog. So, empty your stomachs and get excited to learn everything you didn't know that you need to know about America's alleged sweetheart, the hot dog. Insight number one, every food story is also a labor story. The food stories we tell each other tend to skew personal or cultural. That's why every Food Network show you've ever watched with a fever opens with the chef telling you that this is a soup their grandma used to make. This is a hoagie their husband loved before he disappeared under mysterious circumstances one morning. This is the dessert that makes them feel closest to their country of origin from over 1,000 miles away. But what I rarely see discussed is the labor involved in getting us those foods, labor that's often underpaid and overworked. This was one of the first major aspects of the hot dog that I rarely saw written about in jingoistic nostalgia pieces, but is just as relevant as the fuzzy feeling you get when you eat a hot dog with your family. The hot dog tells the story of class, of CEOs exploiting factory labor, busting unions, and discriminating against a majority poor and immigrant workforce, allegedly so that the product can remain cheap. There have been very little improvements in meatpacking factories since Upton Sinclair's The Jungle prompted changes in law toward animals and laborers in the early 1900s. Taking a look at the horrific, completely government and corporation-sanctioned conditions in which meatpacking employees were forced to expose themselves to COVID long before a vaccine was available completely turned my stomach while I was researching the book. And here's what they don't want to tell you. Working conditions don't have to be like this for the hot dog to remain affordable. What would be necessary is CEOs to be less predatory and greedy about their personal profits and allow the once strong unions in the meatpacking sector to rebuild. There is an ethical and affordable way to consume a hot dog, but you'd never know it from the shamelessness with which most American companies treat their employees and animals. Insight number two. Every hot dog origin story you've heard is completely made up. Oh, the hot dog origin stories I've heard. There's the one at the baseball game where the vendor gave out little white gloves to hold a hot sausage before realizing perhaps a bun would work better. There's the one where the hot dog and the hot dog cart were invented on the same day. There's the one where it was too rainy for ice cream and peanuts and a concession stand owner improvised. All total lies, but they sound pretty good, right? All these business myths have two things in common. They take place in the early 1900s, and they rely on one guy pulling himself up by his bootstraps and prompting a hot dog empire. It's a myth we see a lot today, whether it's Bill Gates starting Microsoft out of a garage or Elon Musk doing... I've lost track of what weird lie he's telling right now. The reality is far more collective, with hot dogs developing out of the sausage traditions of German, Polish, Austrian, and Greek food traditions, becoming popular during the Great Depression for its affordability and being further refined by Industrial Revolution machinery. It's not very sexy, but it is very true. Insight number three, justice for women hot dog eaters. No area of the hot dog universe is impervious to systemic injustice. including the strains of racism and gender discrimination in the history of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest on Coney Island. Legendary Japanese competitive eater Takeru Kobayashi initially came to New York to compete in the early 2000s in the annual 4th of July contest, and his signature technique, showmanship, and athletic build instantly exploded the popularity of both Kobayashi and the contest, which previously hadn't been that big of a deal in the States. For a while, Kobayashi was the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. He appeared on TV every year, he garnered sponsorships, and he was Major League Eating's primary champion, before a white male competitor presented a challenge in the form of current champion Joey Chestnut. The owners of Major League Eating saw an opportunity to edge Kobayashi out of the sport for a champion they felt was a real American. Major dog whistle there. They gave Kobayashi bad contracts and poor treatment, villainizing him within the sport, until he left Major League Eating and the hot dog eating contest altogether, after building its popularity in the first place. And that's to say nothing of how poorly women hot dog eating champions have been treated historically. My favorite person in the hot dog expanded universe, out of anybody, is Sonia the Black Widow Thomas, a woman who immigrated from South Korea to the U.S. and was managing a Burger King on a naval base in Maryland in the early 2000s when she discovered her talent at competitive eating, ironically, by seeing Kobayashi on TV. The rest is history. Within 2 years, she had launched to the top of her field and similarly became a very popular cultural figure before Major League Eating split the contest into a deeply binary men and women's contest in 2011. And by the way, they told Sonia Thomas and other women competitors this at a tea party they threw at the Plaza Hotel in New York just to really rub salt in the wound, not infantilizing at all. And this meant all the expected injustices. Women would get less money for winning their contest, $2,500 to the men's $10,000. Their championship belt was replaced by a bright pink Pepto-Bismol belt, and their broadcast was relelegated to ESPN3 instead of the main channel event of the men's contest. And it's like that to this day. And if the only thing I can do with this book is to get the women's contest back on ESPN1, it will all have been worth it. Justice for women hot dog eaters. Insight number 4. The people who drive the Wienermobile are probably having sex with each other. Maybe you could have guessed this one, but I'm here to confirm it. After trailing a pair of Wienermobile drivers for a couple of weeks in late 2021, I was able to finally access the sexy hot dog gossip no one knew they wanted, but desperately want. Yes, the pairs of people driving the Wienermobiles across the country to promote Oscar Mayer products are very likely hooking up with each other. Here's how becoming a Wienermobile driver works. After a rigorous national search, every year, 12 recent college graduates are selected to be drivers on the granddaddy of promotional vehicles, the red and yellow Wienermobile, for a full year. Drivers are sorted into 6 pairs for the 6 vehicles that travel the country, almost completely at random, and they get to know each other by going to Wisconsin and training on all things Oscar Mayer for 2 weeks. They learn hot dog puns, they learn how to turn a gigantic hot dog onto the highway, and they learn each other's bodies. They're in their early 20s. There are a number of Wienermobile pairings that have led to marriage over the years, and others tell me, discreetly and off the record, that a steamy summer driving across the country is just as common. I mean, hey, you're spending 6 months living in a hot dog and out of hotels. What else are you going to do? Which brings me to my next point. Whoever gets to tour a Wienermobile in their area, please take a black light to it for me. I want to see about something. And ironically, I learned this from the only pair of drivers who didn't seem to be in love with each other in 2021. They were constantly fighting about the radio station, and they described it as an arranged marriage. And finally, insight number 5, you need to toast the bun. This may be a polarizing take and may cause you to lose any respect and trust we've built over the course of this segment, but my God, if you are eating a hot dog, you gotta toast that bun. In my 200-plus hot dog journey across the country, I cannot overstate how many quality hot dogs were ruined by poor bun infrastructure. Especially if you're enjoying a regional make with a lot of toppings. Think the Chicago dog with the full salad on top, or a good chili dog with a hefty serving. The very worst thing that can happen is for a soft, underprepared bun to turn to liquid gluten in your hands beneath a quality hot dog. Every vendor in the world can give themselves the gift of a superior hot dog and a happy customer with just a light toasting. I will and have gone to the mat on this issue, and you all need to face the fact that I am correct. And there's plenty more where that came from, but I hope you enjoyed your first course.
Thank you, Jamie. That was Jamie Loftus with 5 Big Ideas from Raw Dog, The Naked Truth About Hot Dogs. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.